Part 5. What's wrong with our diet? Chapter 14. The deadly effects of fructose. Sugar is fattening. This nutritional fact enjoys almost universal agreement. The 1977 Dietary Guidelines for Americans clearly warned against the dangers of excessive dietary sugar, but the message got lost in the anti-fat hysteria that followed. Dietary fat was the overwhelming concern of health-conscious shoppers, and the sugar content of food was ignored or forgotten. Bags of jelly beans and other candies were proudly proclaiming themselves to be fat-free. The fact that they were virtually 100% sugar didn't seem to bother anybody. Sugar consumption rose steadily from 1977 to 2000, paralleled by the rising obesity rates. Diabetes followed with a time lag of 10 years. Is sugar toxic? The worst offender, by far, is the sugar-sweetened drink. Soft drinks, sodas, and more recently, sweetened teas and juices. Soda is a $75 billion industry that had, until recently, seen nothing but good times. Per capita intake of sugar-sweetened drinks doubled in the 1970s. By the 1980s, sugar-sweetened drinks had become more popular than tap water. By 1998, Americans were drinking 56 gallons per year. By the year 2000, sugar-sweetened drinks provided 22% of the sugar found in the American diet, compared to 16% in 1970. No other food group even came close. Thereafter, sugar-sweetened drink relentlessly declined in popularity. From 2003 to 2013, soft drink consumption in the United States dropped by close to 20%. Sweetened iced teas and sugary sports drinks have valiantly tried to take their place, but have been unable to block the winds of change. By 2014, Coca-Cola had faced 9 consecutive years of sales decline as health concerns about sugar mounted. Concerned with declining health and ballooning waistlines, people were less inclined to drink a toxic sugary brew. Sugar-sweetened drinks now face strong political opposition, from proposed soda taxes to the recent effort by New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg to outlaw oversized beverages. Some of the problems, of course, are self-inflicted. Coca-Cola spent decades convincing people to drink more soda. They were wildly successful, but at what cost? As the obesity crisis grew, the companies found themselves under increasing fire from all sides. But the sugar pushers weren't so easily defeated. Knowing that they were fighting a losing battle in much of North America and Europe, they took aim at Asia to make up for lost profits. Asian sugar consumption is rising at almost 5% per year, even as it has stabilized or fallen in North America. The result has been a diabetes catastrophe. In 2013, an estimated 11.6% of Chinese adults have type 2 diabetes, eclipsing even the long-time champion, the U.S., at 11.3%. Since 2007, 22 million Chinese were newly diagnosed with diabetes, a number close to the population of Australia. Things are even more shocking when you consider that only 1% of Chinese had type 2 diabetes in 1980. In a single generation, the diabetes rate rose by a horrifying 1,160%. Sugar, more than any other refined carbohydrate, seems to be particularly fattening and leads to type 2 diabetes. Daily consumption of sugar-sweetened drinks not only carries a significant risk of weight gain, but also increases the risk of developing diabetes by 83%, compared to drinking less than one sugar-sweetened drink per month. But is the culprit sugar or calories? Further research suggested that the prevalence of diabetes rose by 1.1% for every extra 150 calories per person per day of sugar. No other food group showed any significant relationship to diabetes. Diabetes correlates with sugar, not calories. Sucrose, against all logic and common sense, had not been considered bad for diabetics. In 1983, Dr. Jay Bantle, a prominent endocrinologist, asserted in the New York Times that the message is that diabetics may eat foods containing ordinary sugar if they keep the amount of calories at the same constant level. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, undertook a comprehensive review in 1986. Citing more than 1,000 references, the Sugars Task Force declared, "There is no conclusive evidence on sugars that demonstrates a hazard." In 1988, the FDA would reaffirm sugar as generally recognized as safe. In 1989, the National Academy of Sciences report Diet and Health, Implications for Reducing Chronic Disease chimed in with the view that sugar consumption by those with an adequate diet has not been established as a risk factor for any chronic disease other than dental caries in humans. Yes. Cavities. There seemed to be no concern that eating more sugar would raise blood sugar. Even in 2014, the American Diabetes Association website stated that experts agree that you can substitute small amounts of sugar for other carbohydrate-containing foods into your meal plan. Why sugar is so fattening? Sugar is sometimes considered empty calories, containing few nutrients. It is also thought to make food more palatable and rewarding, causing overconsumption and obesity. But perhaps the fattening effect of sugar is due to its nature as a highly refined carbohydrate. It stimulates the production of insulin, which causes weight gain. But then again, most refined carbohydrates, such as rice and potatoes, do so too. What was it specifically about sugar that seems to be particularly toxic? The Intermap study compared Asian and Western diets in the 1990s. The Chinese, despite much higher intakes of refined carbohydrates, had far lower rates of diabetes. Part of the reason for this advantage lies in the fact that their sugar consumption was much lower. Sucrose differs from other carbohydrates in one important way. The problem? Fructose. Sugar basics. Glucose, a sugar with the basic molecular structure of a six-sided ring, can be used by virtually every cell in the body. Glucose is the main sugar found in the blood and circulates throughout the body. In the brain, it is the preferred energy source. Muscle cells will greedily import glucose from the blood for a quick energy boost. Certain cells, such as red blood cells, can only use glucose for energy. Glucose can be stored in the body in various forms, such as glycogen in the liver. If glucose stores run low, the liver can make new glucose via the gluconeogenesis process, literally meaning making new glucose. Fructose, a sugar with the basic molecular structure of a five-sided ring, is found naturally in fruit. It is metabolized only in the liver and does not circulate in the blood. The brain, muscles, and most other tissues cannot use fructose directly for energy. Eating fructose does not appreciably change the blood glucose level. Both glucose and fructose are single sugars, or monosaccharides. Table sugar is called sucrose and is composed of one molecule of glucose linked to one molecule of fructose. Sucrose is 50% glucose and 50% fructose. High fructose corn syrup is composed of 55% fructose and 45% glucose. Carbohydrates are composed of sugars. When these carbohydrates contain a single sugar, monosaccharides, or two sugars, disaccharides, they are called simple carbohydrates. When many hundreds or even thousands of sugars are linked into long chains, polysaccharides, they are called complex carbohydrates. However, it was recognized long ago that this classification provided little physiological useful information, since it only differentiates based upon the chain length. It had previously been thought that complex carbohydrates were digested more slowly, causing less of a rise in blood sugar, but this is not true. For example, white bread, which is composed of complex carbohydrates, causes a very quick spike in blood sugar, almost as high as a sugar-sweetened drink. Dr. David Jenkins reclassified foods according to their blood glucose effect in the early 1980s, which provided a useful comparison of the different carbohydrates. This pioneering work led to the development of the glycemic index. Glucose was given the value of 100, and all other foods are measured against this yardstick. Bread, both whole wheat and white, has a glycemic index of 73, compared to Coca-Cola, which has a value of 63. Peanuts, on the other hand, have a very low value of 7. There is an unspoken assumption that most of the negative effects of carbohydrates are due to their effect on blood glucose, but this idea is not necessarily true. Fructose, for example, has an extremely low glycemic index. Furthermore, it should be noted that the glycemic index measures blood glucose, not blood insulin levels. Fructose, the most dangerous sugar. Where does fructose fit in? Fructose does not raise the blood glucose appreciably, yet is even more strongly linked to obesity and diabetes than glucose. From a nutritional standpoint, neither fructose nor glucose contains essential nutrients. As a sweetener, both are similar. Yet fructose seems particularly malevolent to human health. Fructose was previously considered a benign sweetener because of its low glycemic index. Fructose is found naturally in fruits and is the sweetest naturally occurring carbohydrate. What could be wrong with that? The problem, as often is the case, is a matter of scale. Natural fruit consumption contributed only small amounts of fructose to our diet, in the range of 15 to 20 grams per day. Things began to change with the development of high fructose corn syrup. Fructose consumption steadily rose until the year 2000, when it peaked at 9% of total calories. Adolescents in particular were heavy users of fructose at 72.8 grams per day. High fructose corn syrup was developed in the 1960s as a liquid equivalent of sucrose. Sucrose was processed from sugarcane and sugar beets. While not exactly expensive, it wasn't exactly cheap. High fructose corn syrup, however, could be processed from the river of cheap corn that was flowing out of the American Midwest, and that was the decisive factor in favor of high fructose corn syrup. It was cheap. In processed food, high fructose corn syrup found a natural partner. As a liquid, it could easily be incorporated into processed food. But its advantages didn't stop there. Just consider that it is sweeter than glucose, prevents freezer burn, helps browning, mixes easily, extends shelf life, keeps breads soft, and has a low glycemic index. Soon, high fructose corn syrup found its way into almost every processed food. Pizza sauce, soups, breads, cookies, cakes, ketchup, sauces, you name it, probably contained high fructose corn syrup. It was cheap, and big food companies cared about cost more than anything else in the world. Food manufacturers raced to use high fructose corn syrup at every opportunity. Fructose has an extremely low glycemic index. Sucrose and high fructose corn syrup, with roughly 55% fructose, have significantly better glycemic index measures than glucose. Furthermore, fructose produces only a mild rise in insulin levels compared to glucose, which led many people to regard fructose as a more benign form of sweetener. Fructose is also the main sugar in fruit, adding to its halo. An all-natural fruit sugar that doesn't raise blood sugars? Sounded pretty healthy. A wolf in sheep's clothing? You bet your life. The difference between glucose and fructose will very literally kill you. The tide began to turn in 2004 when Dr. George Bray from the Pennington Biomedical Research Center of Louisiana State University showed that the increase in obesity closely mirrored the rise in use of high-fructose corn syrup. See figure 14.1. In the public consciousness, high-fructose corn syrup developed as a major health issue. Others correctly pointed out that high-fructose corn syrup use increased in proportion to the decreased use of sucrose. The rise in obesity really mirrored the increase in total fructose consumption, whether the fructose came from sucrose or from high-fructose corn syrup. But why was fructose so bad? Fructose metabolism. As the dangers of dietary fructose received increased scrutiny, researchers scrambled to investigate. Glucose and fructose differ in many significant ways. Whereas almost every cell in the body can use glucose for energy, no cell has the ability to use fructose. Where glucose requires insulin for maximal absorption, fructose does not. Once inside the body, only the liver can metabolize fructose. Where glucose can be dispersed throughout the body for use as energy, fructose is targeted like a guided missile to the liver. Excessive fructose puts significant pressure on the liver since other organs cannot help. It is the difference between pressing down with a hammer and pressing down with a needle point. Much less pressure is needed if it is all directed into a single point. At the liver, fructose is rapidly metabolized into glucose, lactose, and glycogen. The body handles excess glucose consumption through several well-defined metabolic pathways, such as glycogen storage and de novo lipogenesis, creation of new fat. No such system is present for fructose. The more you eat, the more you metabolize. The bottom line is that excess fructose is changed into fat in the liver. High levels of fructose will cause fatty liver. Fatty liver is absolutely crucial to the development of insulin resistance in the liver. That fructose directly causes insulin resistance was discovered long ago. As far back as 1980, experiments proved that fructose, but not glucose, caused the development of insulin resistance in humans. Healthy subjects were given an extra 1,000 calories per day of either glucose or fructose. The glucose group showed no change in insulin sensitivity. The fructose group, however, showed a 25% worsening of their insulin sensitivity after just 7 days. A 2009 study showed that prediabetes could be induced in healthy volunteers in only 8 weeks. Healthy subjects ate 25% of their daily calories as Kool-Aid sweetened with either glucose or fructose. While this seems high, many people consume this high proportion of sugar in their diets. With its low glycemic index, fructose raised blood glucose much less. The fructose, but not the glucose group, developed prediabetes by 8 weeks. Insulin levels as well as measures of insulin resistance were significantly higher in the fructose group. So only 6 days of excess fructose will cause insulin resistance. By 8 weeks, prediabetes is establishing a beachhead. What happens after decades of high fructose consumption? Fructose overconsumption leads directly to insulin resistance. mechanisms. Insulin is normally released when we eat. It directs some of the incoming glucose to be used as energy and some to be stored for later use. In the short term, glucose is stored as glycogen in the liver, but the liver's storage space for glycogen is limited. Once it's full, excess glucose is stored as fat. That is, the liver begins manufacturing fat from glucose through de novo lipogenesis. After the meal, as insulin levels fall, this process reverses. With no food energy coming in, stored food energy must be retrieved. Glycogen and fat stores in the liver are turned back into glucose and distributed to the rest of the body for energy. The liver acts like a balloon. As energy comes in, it fills up. As energy is needed, it deflates. Balancing feeding and fasting periods over a day ensures that no net fat is gained or lost. But what happens if the liver is already crammed full of fat? Insulin then tries to force more fat and sugar into the liver, even though it's already full of fat and sugar. Just as it is more difficult to inflate a fully inflated balloon, insulin has more difficulty trying to shove more fat into a fatty liver. It takes higher and higher levels of insulin to move the same amount of food energy into a fatty liver. The body is now resistant to the efforts of insulin, since normal levels will not be enough to push sugar into the liver. Voila! Insulin resistance in the liver. The liver, like an overinflated balloon, will try to expel the sugar back into circulation. So continuously high insulin levels are also required to keep it bottled up in the liver. If insulin levels start to drop, the stored fat and sugar comes whooshing out. To compensate, the body keeps raising its insulin levels. Thus, insulin resistance leads to higher insulin levels. High insulin levels encourage more storage of sugar and fat in the liver, which causes even more overcramming of fat in the already fatty liver, causing more insulin resistance, a classic vicious cycle. Sucrose, a 50-50 mix of glucose and fructose, therefore plays a dual role in obesity. Glucose is a refined carbohydrate that directly stimulates insulin. Fructose overconsumption causes fatty liver, which directly produces insulin resistance. Over the longer term, insulin resistance also leads to increased insulin levels, which then feeds back to increase insulin resistance. Sucrose stimulates insulin production both in the short term and in the long term. In this way, sucrose is twice as bad as glucose. The effect of glucose is obvious in the glycemic index, but the effect of fructose is completely hidden. This fact misled scientists to downplay the role of sucrose in obesity. But the uniquely fattening effect of sugar has finally been recognized. Cutting back on sugars and sweets has always been the first step in weight reduction in virtually all diets throughout history. Sugars are not simply empty calories or refined carbohydrates. They are far more dangerous than that, as they stimulate both insulin and insulin resistance. The extra fattening effect of sugar is due to the stimulation of insulin resistance from fructose, which festers for years or even decades before it becomes obvious. Short-term feeding studies completely miss this effect, as evidenced by a recent systemic analysis. Analyzing many studies lasting less than a week, it concluded that fructose shows no special effect outside of its calories. That's analogous to analyzing smoking studies lasting several weeks and concluding that smoking does not cause lung cancer. Sugar's effects, as well as obesity, develop over decades, not days. This explains the apparent paradox of the Asian rice eater. The Intermap studies of the 1990s found that the Chinese were eating very high amounts of white rice, but suffered little obesity. The key was that their sucrose consumption was extremely low, which minimized the development of insulin resistance. Once their sucrose consumption started to increase, they began to develop insulin resistance. Combined with their original high carbohydrate intake, white rice, this was a recipe for the diabetes disaster they are facing right now. What to do? If you want to avoid weight gain, remove all added sugars from your diet. On this, at least everybody can agree. Don't replace them with artificial sweeteners, as we'll see in the next chapter. Those are equally bad. Despite all the doom and gloom of the obesity epidemic, I am actually quite optimistic that we may have turned the corner. At last, the evidence is accumulating. The relentless increase of obesity in the United States has recently started to slow, and in some states may, for the first time, begun to decline. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the rate of new cases of type 2 diabetes is also starting to slow. The reduction of dietary sugars plays no small role in this victory.